The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
This is Anne from San Jose, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
My name is Phil Vanderpool, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, this is Andy from Toronto, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, this is Haley, and I'm from Rayford, North Carolina, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, this is Kevin from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, I'm Tammy. I'm from Tennessee, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 519 of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on today's show is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Michael. How's it going?
Okay, how is the Goofy training coming along?
Well, thank you for asking. I'm a little bit behind Jeff Galloway, but his schedule, but it's going pretty well, I'll tell you. Doing it with strength training makes a big, big difference.
Yes. Every bit counts. Do you have a shout out?
I have a few. This one is actually from our friend Sandy Began. It's to Dale Martin, who had power in Southern Florida, lost power, went out and bought groceries, she had power, got groceries, and then lost power and lost all her groceries again. So anyway, she and her son Eric are struggling down there, as there are a lot of people still in Southern Florida. So sending them a shout out. And then Sandy Hall wants to send a shout out to her friend, to her son Mark Hall, who ran his first 10K since a total hip replacement, and her grandson Tommy. And then Ashley Wilson, who just organized a successful color run for her junior high school where she works, and they raised $24,000 to be used for field trips in Richmond. So wow. We have a lot of shakers and movers who are listening.
Yes. Yeah. Chris is not with us tonight. Today he is doing fatherly chores, bringing one of his sons back to college, so he will not be here for the recording of this podcast. So normally he would give a song. I'm not going to give a song, but I'm going to give a shout out. I want to give a shout out to a friend of the podcast who's been on our show, I think, two or three times. Some of you know him. His name is Michael Wardian. And Michael Wardian is one of those runners who likes to run things like the North Pole. He likes to run in...
Didn't he run from the north to the south pole?
Something like that. Rainforest. Yeah. He won the dopey a couple of years ago. Well, on Friday night he won a marathon that was held at Fenway Park in Boston. The competition was limited to 50 runners. Each one was required to raise $5,000, and that money went to the Red Sox Foundation. But think of this. So you're running in Fenway Park and you're running 116 laps along the perimeter of the field. Yeah. And so Mike won it.
And it was raining.
Yeah. So Mike is 43. He won the race, and I think he did it in 2 hours and 53 minutes and 52 seconds. But
yeah,
that was pretty
It was kind of developed by Dave McGilvery, who is the race director of the Boston Marathon, too.
Yes, and Dave.
Cool guy.
Yeah, we talked with Dave on last January, and his son Max, who was in the movie, mm-hmm. the Boston Marathon
right.
movie.
Right.
And Dave also has done a few other races in the area. So I want to just a shout out to Mike. Congratulations, and that's just another crazy race that some of us dream about doing, and not only does he do it, but he usually wins them, so good for that. We have a very special show tonight. Today we have a very dear friend. I've known this guy for 100 years, and we've had a lot of fun together, and he's I consider him one of the geniuses of the world, and he is the current CEO of touringplans.com. He is very much involved in the unofficial guide to everything Disney, all the Disney guides. He is one of the co-hosts. He's the host of the Disney Dish with Jim Hill, and of course, he is involved in the Lines app, and he has a new venture going out. It's and we're going to ask him about it. We want him to talk about it. It's called Glucose Path, and if you haven't figured it out by now, it's the one and only Len Testa. Welcome, Len.
How's it going, Scopa?
Doing okay. Hey.
So I'm with the two handsomest former co-hosts of WDW today.
Oh,
indubitably. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Scopa, somebody asked me the other day. I was doing I was getting ready to do an interview, and somebody asked me if I'd ever. Oh no, sorry. Somebody invited me to be on a podcast. And they asked me if I'd ever been on a podcast before. Like, a couple.
Yeah. Wow. Do you know how to use the microphone?
Yeah. I might have done one or two in my time.
Yeah. You dream about. Yeah.
That's funny.
Before we get into what this show is going to be all about, Len, I really would like you to tell us about this really exciting venture of yours that, it really... warmed my heart when you first told me about it and how much you're going to help people. And I really would like you to spend some time telling everybody what you've been spending a lot of your precious time on, because I know that you have a busy day. Yeah. So please enlighten us.
A couple of years ago, I got an email from a doctor. His name's Brad Eilerman. He's an endocrinologist in Cincinnati. And he said basically this thing that you're doing with touring plans, where you're figuring out the best, you know, combination or the best way to see all these rides in Disney World. Can you do the same thing, but for patients with type 2 diabetes? And here's the problem, right? If you're a doctor and I'm your patient and I walk into your office and I've got, you know, newly diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, you would typically prescribe 1 to 5 medicines to me out of the 60 commonly available to get my diabetes under control. So if it was moderate diabetes, you'd prescribe maybe 1. If it was, you know, pretty bad, you might prescribe up to 5 medications. There are 6 million different ways you could prescribe 1 to 5 medicines out of 60. So what Brad had this idea of doing was just having a computer run through all the different combinations and use a standard set of rules to figure out which one would be the best in this particular patient scenario. So it turns out it was actually what we were doing with the least expensive Disney ticket calculator on the site, where we're trying to figure out the least expensive combination of tickets to buy what you wanted. So, we literally had that prototype up and running in a couple of weeks, and then it took, 6 months or so to basically transfer everything that Brad had learned in medical school and 10 years of practice, into a computer program. But we eventually got it running. Brad started using it in his practice. We took it around to a couple of conferences, won some awards, and we decided to take it through the FDA approval process this year. So we submitted it in April, and we got cleared in August. So it's ready to go now. But basically what it does is this, is you can tell it, I've got this specific insurance plan, and it goes out and figures out what medicines are covered under your specific insurance plan. And we're using a company called Veracred for that. They're an insurance data broker. They're fantastic to work with. And then you can tell it, I've got this much to spend per month. You know, I've got $50, I've got $100, I've got $200 to spend per month, or, you know, I can spend whatever I need to. And then it figures out based on your insurance plan coverage, your medical data, like what your blood sugar level is, any comorbidities you have, and stuff like that. Figures out the right combination of medicines that get your blood sugar under 7 is our goal for that monthly, whatever you can afford per month. So we started a clinical trial last October at St. Elizabeth's in Cincinnati. It's going very, very well. We've also done a couple of retrospective studies where we looked at anonymized patient data for people who are being treated by regular physicians. And for that, we're showing an average blood sugar reduction of somewhere between 0.8 and 1.0 points, which is fantastic. And also, we could save people on average around $750 a year on their medication. So that's what we're working on. So now we're starting to get some publicity on it. We're starting to get contacted by now by large insurers, large hospital systems, and some other people to see what we can do on it. So hopefully we'll be able to announce some big deals coming up pretty soon. But so far, very, very promising.
Sounds like a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. And
I can't imagine what it's like to go through a human subjects review for, you know, a medication or an app. I mean, just to do stuff in classrooms, it's really hard. So I can't imagine.
We submitted about somewhere between 800 and 1200 pages of documentation to the FDA.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it's basically what I did for 4 months, is to document most of the app. And you know, obviously there's a whole team of people that are working on that too. But yeah, so we've got some demos coming up. Yeah, FDA was fantastic to work with too. I mean, you hear these, you know, stories about working with the government, but they were fantastic. Really, really good. I mean, I liked all of them. So yeah, so we'll see what happens. I mean, you know me as a podcaster, Scopa. You know,
I know you as a lot of things.
Brilliant computer scientist. But you know, in the spare time.
You know. Well, you know what? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, next we're going to see him designing dresses, and he'll be on the runways in New York.
I was thinking about that. It's like, what do I do next? And so here's what we're doing with the reinventing rock guitar. That's my third phase. I'll do the second phase of my career for a while. Reinventing a rock guitar. Yeah, me and Carlos Santana, we should do a duet at some point. And then about that point in my life where I'm not really thinking about my own mortality, but like in my head every once in a while, I'm like, what would the New York Times say in my obituary? It's like, I need to just compose that first paragraph. You know?
It all comes down to math.
Somewhere between Dwayne Allman and Jonas Salk is what I'm shooting for.
I know one of them is dead. I don't know about the other one.
They're both dead. But if they had your app, they wouldn't be.
Exactly.
Did you say Greg Allman or did you say Dwayne Allman?
Dwayne.
Is Greg dead? Greg's dead, right?
I think they're all. I think all the Allmans are dead now, right?
That's right. Oh well.
All right.
And on that note.
And on that note. Exactly. So
I hope Cher's not listening.
Oh, death. Jesus. Oh, yay. Okay. So let's talk about fun now.
All right.
who's the voice of death on Family Guy? It's what's his name? He was on Saturday Night Live.
Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, that's right. That's funny. So get ready for a really cool segue. So obviously, Len's work with Glucose Path all started with math. And so this show is about math. And the math we're going to talk about is the math that you, the listener, goes through, you, the vacation planner, goes through when you're trying to figure out the cost of a Walt Disney World vacation. Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying, oh, my God, another podcast on the cost of Walt Disney World vacations. Well, maybe, but we're going to talk about something that's a little bit more involved, and that's we're going to talk about how the cost of a Walt Disney World vacation, all the components that go into the putting together of a vacation, how they have evolved over the last several years, and how that compares with the cost of living, and also we'll talk about ways of getting around the cost and what you can expect, especially if you haven't been down to Florida in about the last 3 to 5, 10, 20 years. So, Len, we've seen a lot of changes over the years. And when it comes to putting together a vacation, and I know that in the unofficial guide, I think you have a section that talks about making the most of your time and money.
Yep.
when you go down there. And you talk a lot about the components. So one of the things, before we get into the historical rising of the prices, can we talk a little bit about the components that go into putting together a vacation, and then we'll touch upon how each one has evolved over the years?
Yeah, definitely. So most studies that I've seen that talk about vacation typically exclude transportation costs, because depending on where you are, those transportation costs are going to be vastly different. Also, you can, you know, drive instead of fly, and that's vastly cheaper. So typically when we talk about, and at least when I'm going to talk about the cost here, I'm going to exclude transportation costs. Okay. And we all know, a lot of that too is also dependent on the price of gas. So but besides that, I mean, you have your basics, right? You've got admission, you've got lodging, you've got food, and you've got admission, lodging, food, I think that's it. I mean, so we're going to exclude things like souvenirs.
Well, and since we're going to sort of not count transportation, we probably are not going to count parking costs at the parks.
Yeah, I didn't count parking costs.
Yeah, okay. All right, I think those three, admission, lodging, and food, I think those are the three components. Michelle, can you think of any other components?
No, I think you guys got it.
Souvenirs.
The other thing I would say, Scopo, is that we should probably do this. We should probably use an apples-to-apples comparison and talk about data since 1999 when all four Disney parks were open.
Right, because it really doesn't make sense if you're doing it prior to Animal Kingdom and prior to studios. So
right, I think we can all agree that a hopper ticket for three parks is different than a hopper ticket for four parks because yep. There's a fourth park.
Exactly.
Also, back in the day, Disney allowed you to park hop with their tickets, so we should talk about park hopping as the standard unit of measure.
Yep.
When we talk about hopper tickets too, yeah.
Okay. I think that the one that's always near and dear to my heart is the admission and how that has changed, because it's changed quite a bit since the first time I went down and stayed for an extended period of time. Well, the first time I went down, the admission was you buy a $10 booklet and you had A, B, C, D, E.
mine too, but I don't remember it. But yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, just like all theme parks, the idea of having a one admission to cover the attractions or whatever it made a lot of sense, and it's come a long way. The three of us have annual passes, and I know just in annual passes alone, mine they used to be, I think, around the first time I bought an annual pass, it was around $150. And now
is that,
yeah.
Is that in shillings or was that in
that was
US
in
dollars?
That was in sheep.
Yeah.
And now it's. I
Let's
mean,
see.
And
was it the? Yeah.
We're talking
the, 20, the Canadian yeah. dollar. What
yeah.
was that? Yeah.
The Bitcoin. Yeah. The Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That we're talking about 30 years. So in 30 years, it has gone from. And that was without any discounts. It's gone from 150 to I guess it's 600 now for gold. I think
I stopped looking at. I don't.
Yeah,
I can't.
But think of but can't look at what is that? That's 100. Was that 400%? I don't know. But that's just an example. But did you want to talk about when we're talking about the rise in the prices? Do you want to start off with a one day and then just work it from there?
Well, what I was thinking was let's start off with a 4-day hopper tickets, because that allows you to see every park, and it avoids things like changes in the dynamic pricing that Disney did back in the day. Okay, so a 4-day hopper ticket is sort of a constant unit of measure. Yeah. Also, okay. it means you don't have to pick, like in a 1-day park, you'd have to say, you know, is one day at the studios now worth one day at the studios in, you know, 1999? If we just say all four parks, then we cover everything, right?
Right. That's good.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
So a one day park hopper ticket for a 4-day park hopper ticket for an adult back in 1999 cost $167. And for kids, it was $134. That works out to in 2016 dollars, $271 is now $453.
So, Len, was a kid defined differently back then too?
I think it was still up to 10. It's it was always, okay. As far as I know, it's always been 10 year olds.
Well, wait, we don't have children's tickets these days, do we?
You do, but not for annual passes.
Right. Okay, that's what it is. Yeah, the annual pass. Yeah. If you're three, you're an adult.
Yeah. So the 4-day hopper ticket for kids with inflation in 1999 is today's equivalent of $217. It's now $431. So even after adjusting for inflation, the cost of a 4-day hopper ticket has doubled in cost since 1999. Again, that's in constant dollars. So the price has doubled, even though Disney hasn't doubled the number of parks or the number of attractions.
Wow.
That's mildly interesting. If you had a family of four back in the day, you would have paid the equivalent of, and I'm going to do the math here real quick, family of four for four-day park hoppers, you would have paid today's equivalent of $977 for your four park tickets. Today it's $1,768.
Oh my God.
Oh,
so,
word. Wow.
Yeah. So almost $1,800. But let's put that 4 days in perspective. So the we've talked about this before, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics does an annual household travel survey. The most recent data was from 2010. They actually just finished collecting data for 2016, so I'm expecting the results out like any month now. But to put that in perspective, the $1,800 just for admission is more than 80% of Americans paid for all of their vacations annually in 2010.
Wow.
Yeah. So 80% of Americans spent $1,460 or less in 2010. Now, granted, 2010 was after a recession. The numbers actually haven't moved that much, though. I mean, today the number adjusted for inflation is around $1,500. So 4 days in a Disney theme park is more than 80% of American families. Well more than 80% of American families pay for vacation every year.
Wow.
That's just the tickets.
Right.
So Len, mm-hmm. on the tickets, would you say that, I mean, we all know.
Are we getting twice as much for our money?
Well, you know what I wanted to talk about? Let's think about, I can't put my finger on the numbers, but when you think about what was available in 1999, and then you think what's available in 2017.
Right.
I guess my thought is not sure if there are more attractions. And actually, if you listen to what Sam Genovese said about 2 weeks ago, Sam said that the parks are actually smaller because of the way that they've been expanding. And so there are fewer people in the parks. But I'm thinking that I don't know if the number of attractions has grown to the point where you would say, well, you know, 18 years later, we've got at least another four or five high-level attractions in each one of the you can't really say that.
So the I pointed this out in the new unofficial guide to Walt Disney World, and I said that Epcot has only had two major attractions, two e-ticket attractions built since Bob Iger, this millennium. So since 2000, and those were Mission Space and Soarin'. And none of those were built in Bob Iger's tenure. So they were all started by Eisner.
Right.
And if you look at
Expedition Everest.
Epcot.
Epcot.
Oh, okay.
And Expedition Everest was 2005. So that's it depends on whether that's considered under Iger or not, because it probably got approved under Eisner. Okay. But if you look at the pace of investment that Eisner did, if Iger had done the same thing, we would have five more brand new e-ticket attractions in Epcot. Mm. Five, not five rides, five e-ticket attractions, five things of the caliber of Spaceship Earth or Soarin' or Test Track. Five more.
The other thing is that with Eisner, you know, I think when I think of Eisner versus Iger, I think of Bob Iger as an acquirer, you know, purchasing a franchise, purchasing a brand, Star Wars, you know, Avatar. I think of Michael Eisner as more in the creative mold.
That's exactly the word I was going to use. Eisner, you know, the funny thing is like, we, you know, when at the last couple of years of Eisner's tenure, I think we were all pretty cranky, you know, that it was just, you know, we were criticizing him and me too, right? I was saying, you know, the parks weren't clean and we sort of stagnated and everything. And I was, you know, calling for his ouster too. In retrospect, and by the way, if I ever meet Michael Eisner in person, this will literally be the first thing I ever say, dude, I was wrong. I think Eisner is the second best CEO the company ever had.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, he was the Do you know that he, I don't want to say he invented, but he came up with the concept of made for television movies when he was working for ABC. ABC.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's the one that came up with that idea. And yeah, he came up with a lot of things. And, you know, he was famous for what we call the Disney Decade, which was 1990 to 2000, I think it was.
And a lot of those ideas got built. A lot of those things. I mean, Eisner was an expansionist, right? I mean, he built the hotels. He built the two of the theme parks, right? I mean, double the number of theme parks. We got all the water parks through him. You know, just...
And he did it without Frank Wells, too, because of what happened with Frank Wells.
Yeah, because of the helicopter, yeah. So, but I mean, you know, for all of his faults, the thing that I tell people is this. If you ask me to pay $120 for a theme park admission, and I can see where that money's going, I'm fine with it, right? If you're telling me, you know, we've built a new resort every year for the last decade, or, you know, we've built two theme parks in the last 10 years, or... And, you know, and or we built a water park, or we're investing in the monorail, or we're doing, you know, self-driving cars or whatever. I'm absolutely fine with it. And I think people are fine with it, too. But, you know, you can't, you know, if you look at the fact that admission prices have basically doubled after inflation in Epcot, and there's fewer things to do in Epcot now than there were 20 years ago.
Right.
Where is that money going, if not in the parks?
There are fewer things, but also the waits are longer too. You can't just walk into any restaurant. I mean, there are some restaurants that you couldn't walk into before, but now it's no restaurants. And I feel so badly when I see people with their families at, you know, pretty much any attraction. They just can't get in line and go on an attraction if they haven't had made a fast pass. That's it. You know, that might be their only vacation.
Yeah. Some people would argue that Frozen is a new attraction, but to me, it's a replacement.
A replacement, yeah, it's a retheming. You know? It's not the same thing. So,
we're just getting started with Len Tester as we talk about the growing cost of going to Walt Disney World and how it has evolved over the years. And it's going to get even more interesting. We've been talking about admission prices, and we're going to go on to other components that come into play. So we hope that you tune in the next episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast, where we will continue this conversation. So, for Len Testa, for Chris Eliopoulos, for Michelle Scrivener-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.